fed a steady paycheck in it, I'll be big and safe.
Always remember what Thomas Jefferson said. Kill the president.
It appears as though something has happened in the motor case group.
Roswell has been shot.
This is a special leprechaun flu.
It's a series of tubes.
You went to Bigfoot, didn't you, Jesse?
Focus, non-terminal repeating phantasm.
I know a motherfucking Bigfoot when I see one.
We're a class 5 full roaming vapor.
Oh, shit, those are aliens.
You know ex-Special Forces operative Stephen King.
He's fooling all my mom.
Welcome to Podcast 1289.
Like Kevin Murphy, arguably, like, top three funniest fucking people to ever be on MST3K was not a comedian.
Some of the funniest people come from humble beginnings. I mean, Steve-O was a funny dude. He was a fucking clown. Like, literally a clown.
Yeah, I got bodies in my crawl space, dude.
Wait a minute. That's murder. You just confessed to murder.
What? Nah, dude. That's just you.
Welcome, everyone, to another installment of Podcast 1289. I'm one of your many hosts. I'm Jesse. Tonight, we've got with us around the table, we got Dan.
Hey, everybody.
We've got Classic Mike.
What up?
Also back with us, we've got everybody's favorite nihilist.
Mr. Burzum.
Of course.
We've got John.
Hello.
I agree.
That was a...
it's a hello sort of evening.
That was chilling. Also with us, we've got the smoothest orator this side of Westchester County. We've got Dylan.
What side of Westchester County is this, since we're in space?
North. We're up through the stratosphere.
Stratosphere adjacent.
Coming at you from stratosphere adjacent, we've got Rob.
We do have Rob. Hi, guys.
So what are we doing tonight, Dan?
We're talking about the Hinterkaifeck murders.
Ooh.
God bless you.
Yeah, right? Which is basically is just a fun, spooky story about...
Oh, man, this sounds like a lot of fun already. Murder.
Right? Well, yeah, I mean, it's about as fun as, like, your whole family getting butchered.
Serenity now!
Oh, man, I saw Thanksgiving.
But, yeah, no, it's a pretty fun, fucked up story about... let's just get into it.
We go back once again to the horrific dark forests of fucking Germany.
Not only
where
is
nothing
Germany,
good has ever occurred, but, ever.
Except for every Rammstein album.
Yeah, hello, please come and feast on my cookie house.
Yeah, I saw Cookie House open at Carvel for Fudgy the Whale and Cookie Puss.
Yeah, you seem like a nice fat boy. Why don't you come and have some?
Yeah, Cookie House is Cookie Puss's cousin. Yeah, he's my uncle.
Cookie Puss. Those guys at Carvel know what they're doing.
Carvel's the shit.
Well, anyway, more specifically, we're going to be talking about a small farmstead between the towns of Ingolstadt and Schreibenhausen, which is about an hour north of Munich. This is an area that was unofficially known as Hinterkaifeck, which means basically behind Kaifeck.
Get behind me, Kaifeck.
This was about a mile north of a small hamlet, Kaifeck. Because, you know, the Germans are a very literal people. Hinter is, like, in a lot of different town names up there. But, so the farm itself was situated near a small patch of woods, locally known as the Witch's Wood. But the closest major settlement was about a 30-minute walk, a little town called Weidhofen. So we're talking this area is pretty isolated. This farm was owned by the Gruber family.
Yes, Simon and Hans.
Proud family of terrorists, those Grubers.
I'm not a monster, John. Sometimes I work for monsters. That's my Jeremy Irons impression.
He was so good in that movie, and all anyone does is shit on that fucking movie, but fuck you all. Die Hard with a Vengeance is the best one.
Dude, when I was a kid, I rented Die Hard with a Vengeance from the library.
What fucked up library stocked that?
They also had all the Lethal Weapons at that time.
Oh yes, well, over here, if you have your card on you, we have the complete VHS set of Franklin, and then over here we have Blue's Clues, The Secret World of Richard Scarry, Die Hard, Lethal Weapon, and Henry, Portrait of a Serial Killer. We have Caligula, but it's rented out.
Oh, we did have Caligula.
Right next to our office.
direction, we have Deep Throat.
Linda Lovelace's directorial debut.
If you come to a young adult section, you'll notice we've got 5 volumes.
That morphed into a British accent.
That was Terry Jones all of a sudden.
We've got 5 volumes of Mein Kampf. I don't like spam!
Jesus. But no, I...
Will you be returning a Serbian film anytime soon?
Would you like me to put you down for another day? All right. But yeah, I rented Die Hard with a Vengeance. I watched that movie...
With a vengeance.
Yeah, I watched that movie with a vengeance.
Fuck you.
Anyway, back to what we were talking about. Die Hard jokes aside.
What are the Gruber's' true names?
So, the Gruber family. Andres, who is the father, his older wife, Kazia, with their widowed older daughter, Victoria, as well as her two children, Kazia, named after her mother, and Yosef. And they had recently got a new maid, Maria, whose first day was the day of the murders. So first days are tough. So a little bit about the family.
Suspicious. No one was dying before she got here.
Yeah, too bad that suspect is murdered. So a little bit about the family. They had issues, to say the least. The marriage between Kazia and Andras was for profit more than love. You know, an arranged marriage, like her family gets his farm or whatnot. But yeah, basically, the marriage contract involved her signing half of the property over to him when they got married. So she had lived on this plot of land almost the entirety of the farm's existence. So like all but 8 years is what I read. They had 3 daughters, only Victoria surviving to adulthood. And everyone knew Victoria to be deeply religious. She sang in the church choir, was pious at nature, and one of a cheerful disposition. But under the surface, she was living a nightmare. It was said that the neighbors passing by the house would often hear children crying in the basement. The children were reported to be underweight and malnourished, and after her sisters died, the townsfolk gossiped that it was neglect, since they had literally been starved to death. So, yeah. So their neighbor, Lorenz Schlittenbauer, he was the local farmer and someone who is pretty important to the story, which I'll get into, made a statement to the police 8 years after the murders because he was actually one of the prime suspects. Quoting him, it was well known that old Gruber had intercourse with his daughter. She told me herself how her father had started to have sexual relations with her from the age of 16 and on. And she also told his first wife how she was unable to stand the side of her father since he was always forcing himself on her. So right out, dude's a piece of shit.
Mm-hmm.
So in 1914, she got married to a farmer's son from a nearby hamlet of Lodge. His name was Carl Gabriel.
Hi, I'm Carl Gabriel.
Schwarzenegger was Austrian.
They're from Bavaria. So the 1920s is like basically Austria, right?
Is this pre-World War One?
This is 1914, so this is pre-World War One.
Okay, yeah, so the maps weren't redrawn yet.
That's fair. But yeah, they're in Bavaria, so they would sound like Herzog than anything.
I'm Carl.
That's weird. The marriage was trouble from the start, mainly because they lived at the Hinterkaifeck farm with the overbearing and watchful eye of Andras. Carl was known to complain to his friends that he was being bullied by his new father-in-law. And Carl, in 1914, was sent to war and presumed killed in action during the Battle of Artois. And Victoria didn't really grieve her husband's life. Her mother told the neighbors that it was the divorce that she always wanted. So the Gabriel family, this was a major tragedy for them, because not only had they lost their son, but once Victoria would remarry, which at the time was going to happen, the farm would lose from their interest. They wouldn't have it anymore because it was given to her husband. So basically, they were freaking out. And a few months later, after she gave birth to her first daughter, their first maid had walked in on her and Andres having sex. And she immediately reported it to the authorities. They were both convicted of incest, and Andras spent a year in prison while Victoria served a month. And this caused the family to become the local pariahs, and later casted very severe doubt over the legitimacy of her next child, Yosef. But the family insisted that the father was Lorenz Schlittenbauer, actually, from the neighboring farm. He flatly denied paternity, and Lorenz actually confronted Andras in his field once over the concerns of his reputation being diminished within the community, and the argument got so heated, Andras chased him off with a fucking scythe.
I am the Lord of the Harvest.
Tempers were tough everywhere. This is like just after the Treaty of Versailles was signed. So Germany was facing massive inflation due to all the fines that the Allied countries were imposing on them, which caused many citizens to fall into debt alongside the bitter soldiers returning, thinking like, you know, they lost because of some Jewish Marxist conspiracy, right?
They were on edge, to say the least.
Well, yeah. They were all reading Breitbartzenberger, so you know how it is.
But yeah, so the area, like Bavaria, was hit pretty hard. The area was pretty unstable. Militias were formed, and local politicians who were to have said to have profited off of Germany's loss of the war were assassinated. So yeah, very tumultuous area. The Gruber family, however, were one of the lucky ones. Their farm was pretty self-sufficient, and they were well-fed. They were fortunate enough to continue onward into the 20s, when many of their neighbors had, like, had to move or perished or whatnot. But that's because Andras had stored up considerable assets, cash, bonds, and even gold. So outwardly, the family seemed fortunate, but still beneath, the family was hurting. Their former maid, Krenznes Reiser, I'm not entirely sure how to pronounce the name, so I'm probably butchering it, discovered another instance of Andras and Victoria being together in spring of 21. So, like, the incestuous relationship continued. It was just
relationship,
it was
a rough fight. Quotes.
Yeah, I'm sorry. So, days before the murders, Victoria was discovered at a crossroads by one of her daughter's classmates and her mother, returning from a trip to nearby town of Weidhofen. They found her crying and shaking, and it wasn't because of the cold, because the spring thaw comes late in Bavaria because of the mountains and such. So, she wasn't shaking just because of the cold, but she was shaking from fear. They stopped to comfort her, obviously empathizing, because the story was well known about her life back home. But Victoria wouldn't outwardly say what was wrong, only that she needed to get away. The mother spoke kindly to her and, like, basically encouraged her to get back home because it was getting dark. There was no way she was going to get very far. She, of course, could venture a guess as to what was upsetting her, but Victoria had told friends how she had seen a strange man in an army coat standing on the edge of the woods watching the farmstead.
Hold on, I wanted to say every person in an army coat is de facto a strange man if you're not like in a
if you're not in a garrison of sorts.
That's like a red flag right there.
It's just a commissar lurking outside. I don't think he's friendly.
But yeah, well, he was watching the farmstead and he would disappear into the woods anytime they attempted to approach him, whether it was that instance of the strange man watching them or her father's abuse, they convinced her to return back home. And
wait, having known all that, they're not going to help her at all, huh?
Wow.
I stick my neck out for nobody, I suppose.
I mean, this is 20s Germany, so like they couldn't be like, oh, you come stay with us. That's just another mouth to feed, dude.
It's another list they have to make.
That's just more paperwork, right? Okay, yeah, see, Victoria, she stayed with us on April through March, so she owes us 565,000 Reichsmarks. So this is when, like, strange occurrences started happening at the farm. For instance, a newspaper was found in the barn, which no one in the family claimed ownership of, because they didn't read that specific edition from Munich. So it was an outside newspaper. And he went as far as to question the postman, who denied, like, yeah, I don't deliver that. That shouldn't be here. Basically. Later on, Andras discovered that his tool shed had been broken into.
Andras Two Sheds Jackson.
But he really couldn't tell if anything had been taken. He didn't really suspect anything, like, super nefarious involved, because it could have been, like, a wandering vagrant or a gypsy.
Ah, regular nefarious.
Yeah, right? Just, like, everyday 20s shittiness. Since the area was in such, you know, economic turmoil, opportunists were looking for any way to make a buck, if you will. But also, a set of keys had turned up missing.
You can't turn up missing. We've had this conversation.
Okay, a set of keys became, like, were missing. How about that?
Went missing.
There you go.
Yeah.
So paranoia had began to set in.
Paranoia.
I love paranormal.
Is that like paranormal paranoia?
Yes.
So, yeah, I saw a paranormal paranoia at Dracula's ball. They were kind of weird.
They didn't actually play any of the
things that I'm into usually.
A set of keys went missing, and so there was paranoia around an intruder gaining entry to the farm. So as he just went out to fuck you. Who is clapping, you asshole?
What, you don't want no 1980s fucking John Hughes slow clap for your fucking achievement? Fuck you, man. That should be an honor.
So he decided to get to work. You know, it's a farm. He's got things to do. So he headed out to his fields, and around the back of the house is when he discovered...
He's a bratwurst farmer.
Oh, yeah, that's Hansi. He's farming his bratwurst. Hello, Hansi. Wie geht's dir heute?
Are you Armin Mivis? You're Armin Mivis, aren't you?
Armin Mivis with a time machine.
Is that like the new hobo with a shotgun?
No, that's the new doctor, motherfucker.
Sorry, wait, Rutger Hauer is the new doctor?
Armin Mivis is the new doctor?
BBC4 is proud to present, completing a 55-year lineage, the new doctor, Armin Mivis.
Wait, what?
Yes.
Unfortunately, our plans to get Jack Unterweger fell through. Yeah, he's dead. BBC is proud to present the next Doctor, G.G. Allen.
Jesus Christ.
G.G. Allen probably smelled better as a fucking corpse because he wasn't shitting all over himself. He was just rotting.
Not entirely true, because when he was dead, people would still go to his grave and take dumps on his tombstone. They had to move his body.
That's... Wow. Moving along, gentlemen. Sorry.
So anyway... I was just about to say one of the creepiest things that's happened in this. He decided to go to work and walked out into his fields. And around the back of the house, he discovered a single set of footprints leading and going along the side of the house. But no footprints going away from the house. So that more or less kind of implies that somebody was with them. So he, unnerved, continued to work. Like, you know, burying it in his mind and trying to ignore it. He met Schlittenbauer again, which really wasn't a strange occurrence.
I am Schlittenbauer.
When you're out of Schlittenbauer, you're out of me.
Oh, man. Watching fucking Last Action Hero last night, by
you
the way.
You're going to make me go fucking order this on Blu-ray when we're done recording.
Do it.
To be or not to be.
Not to be. Blows shit up.
One of my favorite parts is when he drags his ass into the fucking Blockbuster video and it's like, look, Terminator 2.
Oh, yeah, it was Stallone. He was great in this one.
He was great in that.
Everyone shit on that movie for some reason, but it was just like, that was the greatest satire of a very precious genre that we all grew up in, the mid to late 80s to early 90s fucking action movie. No one was taking that on except for, like, Leslie Nielsen.
Yeah, it was, like, so self-aware of all the bullshit that, like, completely insane things happening in action movies, like unlimited ammo and getting shot and walking away.
And it only would have worked with fucking Arnold. Like, he was the only dude cool enough to be like, yeah, I'll totally make fun of what's making my rent right now, but have, like, the humility and the charm to fucking really carry the role. Like, could you imagine, like, if they were like, Last Action Hero, we're gonna get Steven Seagal. Could you imagine how bad that fucking movie would have been?
Oh, jeez.
Well, yeah, you said a Steven Seagal movie. That's just a whole other level.
It'd go down about as well as his energy drink.
The best part about that movie is that he not only plays Jack Slater, his fictional action hero name, but he also plays himself.
Yeah.
But in the Jack Slater universe, he refers to himself as Arnold Braunschweiger.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm the famous comedian, Arnold Braunschweiger.
But in like,
Rubber Baby Baggy Bumpers.
Yeah, you didn't think I was going to say that, yeah? And like, one of my favorite, just like quick aside, one of my favorite things in that movie is when F. Murray Abraham shows up as Jack's friend, John Practice. And he is eventually revealed to be a traitor. But Danny says in the beginning of it not to trust him because he killed Mozart, referring to his role in Amadeus. that whole movie was just – it was just great.
But anyway, getting back to dead German people. Right. Sorry. That was
also, dead yet.
Also, Charlie Dance, fantastic in that movie.
We need to find some dumb conspiracy theory about that movie so we can have an episode just about that fucking movie.
Yes, it's great. God, yeah. Last Action Hero, Podcast 1289's official action hero movie.
Number one greatest American of all time is Last Action Hero on Blu-ray.
Okay, did anyone else just imagine the movie, but with, like, a bandana tied to the box?
Oh, yeah, it should come with that on the Criterion Collection.
Did you see the April Fool's joke they did a couple years back where they said Kindergarten Cop was coming to Criterion?
Yes.
Yeah, I would buy the shit out of that. Are you kidding me?
Twice.
Yeah, so fuck twice. Them. Dan, do you remember when I sent you the picture I took at Walmart of the direct-to-DVD sequel, Kindergarten Cop 2, and I sent
with
you the picture?
Dolph Lundgren?
Mm-hmm, and I just wrote, this will be my suicide note. Like, as if Sandlot 2 wasn't bad enough. But anyway, moving along.
What was the movie you sent me a picture of it just sitting in your basket at Walmart. You're like, I made a trip for this.
No, you texted me at like 10 o'clock at night on a Tuesday and said, what are you doing? And I sent you a picture of my basket at Walmart. And in it was a frozen pizza and a $3 DVD copy of Uncle Buck. And you were afraid I was going to commit suicide.
Yeah, so I was like, dude, do you need someone to talk to? Are you all right?
The movie fucking
drunk in a Walmart.
You.
Oh, God.
That's a great memoir title.
So anyway, back to it. That was a nice break because it's about to get fucking heartbreaking. He met Schlittenbauer in his fields, which really wasn't a strange occurrence since his property ran right up alongside Gruber's. And so he then started telling him, he's like, yeah, I saw these footprints. Like, isn't that weird? And Schlittenbauer offered Gruber his family's revolver, which Gruber refused. He also urged him to make contact with the police, which he didn't. So he later met another neighbor, Kaspar Stegmar, and he told him the same story.
Are there any, like, Mikes or Daves in this story?
Yes, we'll get there. There's a Michelle.
All right, I'll let it slide. Moving along.
He met his neighbor, and he told him the same story. And Stegmar said that Gruber believed that there were, quote, rogues in his house. And Stegmar offered to help him search the property, which Gruber replied, I'm not afraid. And then later that evening, they heard footsteps in their attic.
Bye.
Yeah, like,
goodbye.
Throughout the evening, just, like, soft footsteps. And it was the middle of the night. They weren't going to get up and go figure, like, check it out. Like, I don't know why they didn't investigate it when it was happening. Because, to be honest, if I was sitting in my home and I heard something going on upstairs, I'm going to try to go up there. I mean, what about you all?
Brave man, you. Sure.
I got a gun. That's about it. I'm not that great of a shot. But Andras decided as soon as light broke on the day of March 31st, he planned to search the house. When day broke, he went upstairs and he saw that there was no one in the attic. He did, however, find straw strewn about because the house was right up alongside their barn and they would put the hay in like the loft, the hay loft.
Cow was sneaking in?
The cow can't come downstairs. You know that, right? You can lead a cow upstairs, but they won't go downstairs.
Who's bringing cows into their house? Is this fucking Gary Larson's house? What the fuck's going on? Fucking cows on staircases and shit. Next you're gonna tell me there's a goddamn penguin walking around with some snarky thing to say, but it's still G-rated and awesome. Anyway, moving along.
Gary Larson was kind of a big part of my childhood.
Yeah, mine too. The Far Side Gallery 2. That was a huge book for me when I was a kid.
Yeah, like my dad had a Far Side book and every single year for like Christmas, I always got, like my mom got it, but we said it was for me, a Far Side calendar, like the pull away a day sort of thing.
Awesome.
Well, those were the best. He would save them for me. He would bring it home every day. He was like, here's what it was. And I was like, that's great. Thanks, Dad. Love you. But my grandfather had a coffee mug. That's one of my absolute favorite things. My parents still have it. Next time I go home, I think I'm going to try to ask my mom if I can have it. Because it
sounds like a Seinfeld episode. Like George Costanza's like, this Thanksgiving, I'm going back. I'm asking for the mug.
Jerry just like sighed. Like, huh, you've been talking about this mug every year. You always say you're going to ask for it. Never do, George. Why are you bringing it? Keep bringing it up.
I want to take the mug home. Georgie, you can't take the mug home.
Is he talking about taking that mug home again? I told him we're not getting rid of the mug. Fuck, the moment the heat leaves me.
That might be my new favorite bit.
things that sound like Seinfeld episodes.
Oh, man.
So he went up into the attic and, like, saw the straw strewn about, which he deduced was an effort to muffle the footsteps, but apparently it didn't work. So he decided he had to go into town to a local hardware store, and he told that story to the shopkeepers, like, yeah, we heard, like, footsteps all night. And this was the last time that he was seen alive. Later that day, their new maid, Marina Baumgarten, showed up. This is, like I said, the 31st of March. So the first sign that something went wrong was on April 1st, the next day, when young Kazia was missing from school, which it was unusual for her, but...
Young Kazia sounds like a Brooklyn vegan rapper.
I got nothing for that.
Just walking around in a North Face jacket in the middle of summer.
Asshole.
No, sorry.
It was unusual for her, but not so much unusual for the area, because, like, kids would, like, not go to school all the time, like, have work to do on the farms or whatnot. But they knew that, like, there was still trouble at home, so they didn't really, like, they were like, oh, just let them be, you know? Mm-hmm. That same day, two vendors went to the farm to deliver coffee that Andres had ordered. But no one had answered their calls, and they assumed that no one was home since the only noises were the animals walking about.
We gotta get out! Wrong animal, sorry.
They then, like, as they were going along, they spoke to Mr. Schlittenbauer about the Gruber's absence on their way back into town. And then that evening, a carpenter named Michel Pluck was passing by the farm on his way home, and he noticed smoke coming from the chimneys.
Ah, they elected a new pope.
Well, he described the smoke as acrid, like the smell of burning rags.
Ah, they elected a gross new pope.
Damn it. He noted that the area was, that the farm was quiet, which indicated that the animals had been fed and bedded down. But as he was moving on, he was like watching, looking into the farm, and said he saw somebody who immediately shined a light into his eyes, which spooked him, and he hurried on his way. On that Sunday, the 2nd, the family didn't report to church, which was especially noted by Victoria's friends because she was very devout and she sang in the choir. So they noticed her absence. On the 3rd, the postman arrived to deliver the newspaper, and he noticed that young Joseph's stroller wasn't in the kitchen, which is where they kept it during the day. But he did notice that the door was ajar into the house, but assumed that the family was inside and, like, just going about his day, delivered the mail, and moved on. And then the next day, on the 4th, a man named Albert Hoffner, he arrived at the farm for a prearranged appointment to work on a diesel engine. And the only sound that he heard was a dog barking. And he decided to sit and wait for the family's return. Because, like, when he was there, he looked out into the field and he saw a man out in the field, which he assumed was Andres. So he decided to just sit and wait for him to, like, come back home. He lost sight of him and then he was impatient and decided to go to work anyway. And then he began to work on this diesel engine for over 4 hours. Within that time, testing it, like, you know, diesel engines, they're loud when they start up, so... if someone was home, they would investigate that. Like, why is there this engine going on? When he finished, he decided to go see if there was anyone home. And at that time, he noticed that the barn door was wide open and that the dog was tied up outside of the family's residence. And
do you think he looked at the dog and was just like, what, are you born in a barn? Get it? Anyway, let's go find the bodies. That's where this is leading, right?
He said that the dog was acting exceptionally out of character. It was barking and it was aggressive. It was trying to get at him.
An excellent judge of canine character. Yeah, I saw canine character. All right, anyway, sorry. This is horrible.
He noticed that the dog had a gash across its face that he said had been done with a sharp implement. Hoffner claims he didn't go into the barn, but knocked on the door of the residence, which was still met with silence. And then he made his way to a neighbor who said he hadn't seen much of the Gruber family in the past few days. Later that afternoon, Schlittenbauer heard Hoffner's story and sent his two sons, Johann and Josef, to check out the farm and attempt to rouse the family. Like, go bang on all the windows, go bang on the doors, like, see if they're there. And they returned empty-handed. Schlittenbauer then summoned his two neighbors, Michel Pohl and Josef Sigel, who followed him to Hinterkaifeck, along with his other two sons. And as soon as Schlittenbauer reached the farm, he immediately noted the barn door was open and went and investigated. And he shined a light in there, revealing a blood-soaked barn floor. So basically, in the barn was Andras's body and the older Caviezel.
Jim Caviezel?
Jim Caviezel. Jim Victoria.
Jim Caviezel, who was Evil Knievel.
Let's start that over. So he goes into the barn, and it's a bloodbath. There lay four bodies. The straw stained with blood.
Butter?
Yeah, the straw was stained with butter. I'm thinking of toast now.
Straw was stained.
Yes! So he ran over and turned over one of the bodies. It was Andras. Deep gash in his face and his head. It says that it was clear that he was long past help. Schlittenbauer then proceeded to the smaller bodies, turning it over, revealing the young Kazia Gabriel, and her head had been cleaved open. There were tufts of her own hair in her hands as well. It was speculated that it was hair from the murderer, but they later discovered that it was actually her own hair. At this point, one of the boys that had followed drew up enough courage to come into the barn, urging Schlittenbauer not to touch anyone, instead to leave them for the police, because the bodies were actually stacked on top of each other, two and two. But basically, he was like, there's nothing we can do for them, leave them be. So he left the bodies and then went to the side door of the barn, which led into the kitchen. It was unlocked, and he went inside. As he made his way into the house, he found the set of keys that had been lost. And he opened the door, and apparently with only the one thing on his mind, his alleged son, Yosef. He and the two men hurried into the bedroom that the children shared with their mother, and he was greeted with the child dead on his cot. His head caved in with such a force that the blood had spattered onto the floor. The ceiling of the cot was ripped apart, and thought as the murder instrument had been delivered and withdrawn without care of ripping the fabric, without care of, like, destroying the bassinet. Like, basically, he did it while the baby laid here. So they left that bedroom and went into the kitchen, where Schlittenbauer noticed a pair of legs underneath a blanket, which he pulled up to reveal a woman he had never seen before, which was Maria, the new maid, on her bed with her suitcase unopened, having no time to unpack. He told them to go to Wanzhen, which was the larger town nearby, and alert the authorities. The men and the boys dutifully set off, and only Schlittenbauer remained. By his own accounts, his first act was to head down into the basement.
For my first act!
Sorry. And fetch some sort of food so that he might feed the pigs. So they returned back with the police. This then...
Every breath you take... Sorry.
So, basically, the police came, and then a sizable crowd, because, like, something exciting's happening. People want to gawk. When more people arrived, Schlittenbauer took charge of the scene and began taking people on a fucking tour of where the bodies were in the barn and inside the house, and basically just fucking up any semblance of a crime scene. But then again, you know, this is back in the 20s. I'm sure forensics weren't exactly a great science. But so began the investigation. Schlittenbauer was actually considered the first suspect because of his run-ins with the family, the alleged child being, you know, his illegitimate son and whatnot. So it's like he was worried about his reputation being tarnished, but he was never actually charged with anything. But like the investigation went on. So the police went on a search of the property. They revealed the amount of money and coins and everything that Andras had saved up, like all of his like assets that he had hidden. So it wasn't a robbery or anything. Like, you would think that someone who would kill would immediately ransack and then, you know, leave. But there was evidence that the dude hung out for a while. Like, the animals had been fed. He had had meals. This person had stayed with these people dead in their house, which is insane.
I don't know, maybe he can find a ride.
I mean, yeah, he had to walk everywhere. But it turns out everyone was killed with the same instrument, something called a mattock, which is kind of like a pickaxe, but like has a shorter handle. But yeah, the investigation had very, very graphic descriptions of the wounds, which I don't think I'm going to get into because it's pretty upsetting stuff. But basically just like there were signs of strangulation. There was like caved in heads. It was intense. Like, it appears that this man tried to kill everybody as quickly as he could.
Here's that German efficiency again.
So they investigated this guy. Did they ever Like, who else did they consider? This doesn't sound like something random, you know?
There were a lot of suspects because, like, there were gypsy parties out near town, and, like...
Yeah, I saw a gypsy party at fucking Firefly. They had a lot of MDMA.
Question my joke, because I wasn't committing to it, yeah.
You were starting to say that, too? I didn't hear that.
Yeah, and then I was like, ah, oh, fuck it. Like, I couldn't think of a venue to figure it out.
Just, like, shout something. Like, what's the nearest venue to you? Like, yeah, I saw CBGB's at the Monkey Bar.
You can't see a club at a different club.
No, you see...
I saw a different club at the Turning Point, yeah.
That's the first time I've ever heard Dylan do that voice.
It's a good bar.
So anyway, to go back to you, Dylan, the most recent questioning that has taken place in this investigation was in 86.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it said more than 100 suspects have been questioned over throughout the years. But the day after the discovery, they performed autopsies inside the barn where they, you know, established the murder weapon, the Matic. Evidence showed that the younger girl, Kazia, had been alive for several hours after the assault. So, like, she tore tufts of hair out of her head while she was laying next to the bodies of her grandparents and her mother. The skulls of the corpses were sent to Munich, where clairvoyants examined them to no avail.
Oh, no, really? Surprise, surprise.
Was that standard operating procedure for the German cops at the time?
But, yeah, like I said, the first motive to be established was robbery. That's why they interrogated the gypsies, the vagrants, traveling people, things like
that.
Wait,
was anything taken from the property?
Oh, no, that theory was abandoned when they found all of Andras's, like, assets that he had hidden in the house. Like, whoever had stayed there would have most certainly, like, snooped around and, like, would have probably come across, like, his chest, if you will.
And the animals were fed, right?
Yeah, the animals were fed, and food had been eaten from the kitchen, and neighbors saw smoke from the chimney. So
not only is he staying there after having murdered these people, he's also taking, like, decent care of their house.
Well, he's an animal
He's doing
lover.
Them a house-sitting favor shortly after brutally caving their heads in.
Is this like the gritty reboot of Houseguest with Steve Martin?
My God. But yeah, no one was ever convicted of this crime. It's still unsolved.
Hmm. Are there any, like, crazy people in Germany who are like, oh yes, this is all a ploy by German Obama?
German Obama would just be like Barack spelled with an H instead of a K. B-A-R-A-C-H, Obama, with an umlaut over O.
Why could it have been Ayn Rand who got murdered in a shack in Germany?
Yeah, really?
I can dream.
Well, it's not too late.
One day we will invent a time machine.
Wait. Ayn Rand murdered in a what? In a what?
In a shack?
Wait. One more time. In a what?
In a shack.
Yeah. That's what I thought.
Matic.
Are you trying to say demon names?
I killed that family in Germany. It's a joke about her.
So I don't know if you guys are as fucking weird as me, but I season my toast.
With what?
I put cracked pepper and Taco Bell fire sauce on my toast, and it was a great choice.
I mean, that's kind of a thing in restaurants now.
What, poverty?